Firstly Spirituality Center presents Muffin Talk with Beate. Kia ora and welcome to Muffin Talk. Muffin Talk is brought to you by the Mercy Spirituality Center in Ipsum. We are a center for retreats, spiritual guidance, Christian meditation and personal development. Once a week, I invite a visitor to join me in the studio to talk about our center, our programs, social justice, different cultures or different religions. Today, I have two visitors in the studio, Rabbi Miri Gold and her husband, David Leichman. And so Rabbi Miri and David, welcome here to the radio program.
Thanks for having us.
Rabbi Miri Gold is, both of them are originally from the United States, and both of them have been living in Israel for more than 40 years. And Rabbi Miri has come to Auckland with her husband, where they are spending the Jewish High Holy Day period. During this time, she is part of the congregation at the Progressive Jewish Synagogue in Beth Shalom in Manuka Road. And David, her husband, I asked how we can summarize his vast experience. He said, a Jewish educator who loves ice cream and baseball. Thank you very much for having come.
Thank you.
And so, Rabbi Miri, this is the first time that I'm interviewing a female rabbi on this radio program. I've interviewed two male rabbis. And I understand that you were the third woman to be ordained in the Reform movement in Israel. How did you become interested in becoming a rabbi?
It evolved slowly. We moved to Israel to a kibbutz, which is a collective community, and we saw ourselves as a liberal Jewish community. When our first children reached the age of bat mitzvah, which is really signaling the start of their maturation process, the adolescence, the boys were going to an ultra-Orthodox kibbutz in yeshiva down the road, and the girls were being driven to Jerusalem, and I woke up out of a stupor and said, we didn't come here to create a community and then have the kids be shipped off to other places and other ideologies, you might say. So I thought about my 12-year Jewish education and my synagogue experience, and I did some brushing up. I had help to learn how to teach the children and lead the ceremonies, and that was the beginning. I also started to lead the high holiday services and eventually realized it was time to go to school. We have a community, a kibbutz, and I thought being a rabbi would give it somewhat of a framework in which to act.
So there was no rabbi in the kibbutz. That's why you had to drive your children outside.
That's correct.
And then you became the rabbi. How long did it take for you to become the rabbi? Is it a long process?
Well, in Israel, it's 4 years studying both for the rabbinic ordination and also it's a time for getting a master's degree in some form of Jewish education or history. I chose the Institute for Contemporary Jewry at Hebrew University in Jerusalem and focused on the Reform movement because I did not grow up in that movement. I grew up in the conservative movement, which was a little more traditional. And if at one time I would say, oh, they're very Reform, it meant, oh, they don't know anything. Today I'm a very proud Reform Jew because there's such an emphasis on social justice.
So is that the main difference, Reform Judaism? Because I don't know how many of our listeners are familiar with the terms Reform Judaism, and then we have the Progressive Synagogue, and you have the Orthodox Judaism. It's all a bit complicated for people who are not so informed about Judaism. Can you say it in a few words what that means?
Well, it's a liberal Jewish community, and one of the things that is most notable is that women have equal opportunities to participate and to lead. In the Orthodox world, only men are rabbis, and in the Reform and liberal community, women have equal opportunities, and so that was comfortable for me. In Israel, there was also an emphasis on tradition, and probably one of the big differences between the Orthodox and the liberal is that we don't take certain writings as set in stone. We advocate studying all of our historical sources, but in many cases, thinking about what's happening around us, look at the circumstances in which we live, and then make our decisions based on the values that are probably the basis for all of our life.
Mm-hmm. And David, you're an ice cream lover, and your wife becomes a rabbi. How was that feeling? Because you didn't marry a rabbi, she became a rabbi when you were already married.
Correct. I'm fine with it as long as I can eat ice cream and make ice cream. So my real profession for almost 50 years was I'm a teacher and educator about Judaism and Israel and so on. And I also have been only for 45 years been making ice cream. And I'm retired now, and I put the two together, my love of teaching and my love of ice cream. So I teach people how to taste ice cream like wine.
Wow.
And groups that come to me. So it's fine. And we have been working together because we're in the same field for many years. We've traveled together to various communities around the world. She has the more spiritual aspect of it. I have a deep understanding of Judaism and Israel and so on. And that's so we've taught together for many years as well.
Did you also think of becoming a rabbi?
I once did, and I was very, very influenced by my rabbi, who said it's not a good job for a good Jewish boy, because it makes it when you're a leader and all of a sudden you have congregants, you have to do what they want you to do, and that wasn't me. I always
so
did
your
what
wife
I wanted
tells
to do.
The people what to do, and you supply the ice cream.
No, the opposite. I'm saying it usually doesn't work that way. That the rabbi really tells them what they should do. It's what the congregation wants you to do.
Okay.
If you want to keep your job, so that's why I chose not to be a rabbi.
But you could support your point of view with the ice cream.
That's right.
For those of you who've just tuned in, you're listening to Muffin Talk with Beate. This program is brought to you by the Mercy Spirituality Center in Ipsum. If you miss any of our programs, please check out www.planetaudio.org.nz/muffintalk or visit our website or Facebook page at Tengaka Waiora Mercy Spirituality Center. My visitors today are Rabbi Miri Gold and David Leichmann, her husband, and they've been telling me about their background and learning about Judaism and becoming a rabbi in the case of Rabbi Miri. So you are now currently working at Beth Shalom, Rabbi Miri. And this is this Jewish synagogue in Manuka Road, not far away from the Mercy Spirituality Center here in Auckland. And as I said in the beginning, you have come for the Jewish High Holy Day period. Can you tell us more about this special period?
Yes, our holidays go by a Jewish calendar. And the first of Tishrei, which is the seventh month of the year in the Jewish calendar, is called Rosh Hashanah, which literally means the head of the year. It's the first of the months. And actually, every month we wish ourselves and those around us all the best, good health and prosperity and peace. So this is the super monthly blessing, but for the whole year, we wish one another a sweet year. We take time for reflection and introspection, and always with the idea that we can make changes in our lives, which is using the Hebrew words, we find the roots that lead us to other significant words. So Shana means year, and Shinui means change. It's also a time when we listen to the shofar, the ram's horn being blown, which is very loud and piercing and is meant to wake us out of our slumber and say, okay, we have to do something. So the word shofar is the same root as the word shipur, which means improvement.
Oh.
So it's all about taking time to think back over the last year and, more importantly, think ahead to what we'd like to do, what changes we can make. At the same time, I think being kind to ourselves to look at those good traits that we have and to build upon them.
And so when is the shofar blown? At the beginning of Rosh Hashanah?
It is blown on Rosh Hashanah. It's also blown at the end of Yom Kippur, which is 10 days later. That will be Tuesday night and Wednesday. All of our holidays start when the sun goes down and the stars come out. We will hear it at the very end of the holiday when we have a very dramatic image of Ne'ilah, the closing of the gates. We all ask to be inscribed in the Book of Life, and it's almost as if we want to get through those pearly gates and have another year of life.
What are these gates? Where do they come from? Is there some reference in the Bible in the scriptures?
Well, it's a spiritual idea of gates, and we can talk about the gates of heaven or the gates of righteousness. There is often in the Psalms, you can find some references to this. And we always are talking about justice on the one hand and righteousness, but also about compassion on the other hand. So it's something that we want to build on. We talk about having our world be built on these concepts of righteousness and of compassion. And in that sense, find some balance in life.
I think that's really interesting because in the Catholic Church we have just celebrated the Sunday of compassion and of mercy, and 2 weeks later you'll have the start of Rosh Hashanah, and as you say, it's all about mercy and compassion at the same time of justice and righteousness, and to a turning point, isn't it?
Yes, and it's really a whole month of holidays. The ones that most people around the world who are of the Jewish faith relate to our Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. But then we go beyond that to the Harvest Festival of Sukkot. And of course, it's interesting that we're here in Auckland where the seasons are just the opposite of what we would have in the land of Israel. But wherever one lives in the world, their prayers are very much focused on what's happening in Israel. So we pray for rain, even though in Auckland we're about to go into the springtime. But in Israel, it will soon be winter. Isn't much snow there, so we're really praying for the rain. And then in the summer, after the Passover holiday, we pray for dew.
So we have Rosh Hashanah is like the 30th of September this year, around the and then you have Yom Kippur on the 9th of October. And when is Sukkot?
Sukkot will be on the 14th. And then a week later, the very end of Sukkot, is when we celebrate the Torah, the five books of Moses. We call it Simchat Torah, the celebration of the Torah. And we read the very end of the five books of Moses and immediately start again with the beginning, with the book of Genesis, or Bereshit. And we literally celebrate by dancing with the Torahs, with music and song and at Beth Shalom, they even have a potluck dessert table afterwards. So the idea is to go and have a good time. And there's a certain sense of lightness, I believe, after the heavy contemplation and reflection. And we want to make repentance for things that we regret, but we also want to ask for forgiveness and grant forgiveness to people. That also takes a lot of courage. So when we get to Sukkot and Simchat Torah, it's much more joyful. And probably with Sukkot, the main commandment that we think about is the idea of hospitality, because we build the sukkah, a temporary home, almost like something you could build out in a field if you were in an agricultural area, where you can see the stars, where you're subject to the rain and the wind. But yet, even in that very humble abode, to welcome people to come and join you in the sukkah. So that's one of the major parts of that holiday.
Is that the reason why they in the synagogues usually have a window on the ceiling that you can look out to either the stars or to the rain? Or for, I was thinking of this temporary place when you say Sukkot, isn't it when you were remembering the time in the desert?
Yes, and a sukkah actually has to have an open door. You can't have more than three walls, and you have to be able to see the sky. And we were people of the land, and that is part of what we're trying to do, and to welcome in the stranger. In fact, we often on Sukkot go to, in your name, the Church of the Children of the Beatitudes, because they are our neighbors, and we celebrate and eat in the sukkah with them on the Saturday, on the Shabbat, at the end of our Sabbath, with them on, that falls in that week. And on Simchat Torah, they come to us. It's a community of nuns and priests and some lay people. And
that's at your kibbutz, sorry.
It's on our kibbutz, yeah. And they come and dance with the Torah with us because we are
people of the book.
People of the book, and they are people of the book, and we celebrate that together.
Well, that's wonderful. So you're involved in interfaith and in relating with other religions.
Yes, very much so.
Can you tell us more about this work? In connection, maybe also you have already brought an example, because I'm interested in learning more about the High Holy Days, because it seems like it's quite concentrated. Do you have about 2 weeks, 3 weeks that you have a lot of holy days? And are you doing that with your neighbors, with your Christian and Muslim neighbors where you are?
Less so, except for the days that we're not just praying, because that's harder for them. And but the celebrations we have, we do include other religions as well, which is not always the case with most synagogues. We are progressive Jews and believe in peace, and that's part of why we want to welcome them into our home. In this particular church, they know Hebrew and will come on Shabbat sometimes on a Friday evening, and they know they can read, and they know the songs and the prayers, and so we have this large family. They come to our home for Passover, a few of them every year. So, yeah, it's part of what we do. And also during Simchat Torah, which is Simcha, is a happy occasion.
That's a celebration of the Torah.
And we also have Muslim and Christian Arabs that will come and dance with us and be with us.
Because the Muslims also have the five books of Moses, and we all have the books.
We might have
a little bit different translation, because there are many different translations of the books.
Not only different translations, different interpretations. And that's part of it. And I think that's what makes the world go round. It's, if everybody thought exactly the same, then they'd be extra. They wouldn't be there for any reason. It is we celebrate differences.
Yeah.
And that is also a celebration, that not everybody thinks the same way and does the same thing, that we have different opinions and different thoughts. But the idea is to understand each other, even if you don't agree with each other. So I think that is part of what we're trying to do in our synagogue, in our lives, not just in the building we walk into, but in our lives, the way we relate to Judaism.
I think the other day I heard somebody saying, how do you imagine paradise? It wouldn't be with all orange flowers of exactly the same height. You'd like to have a diverse garden, wouldn't you?
That's exactly right. The word for community in Hebrew is kihilah. And the word for a choir is makhela, same root of the word. And a kila is when people come together, and a makhela is a choir. Now, in a choir, everybody's singing the same music, reading the same music, reading the same words, but the beauty of a choir is that we hear all the different voices, and that is the synergy. And that's the same with all of these differences that we have.
I think that you have a great advantage that you speak Hebrew, because sometimes when you translate, you have to explain so much around, because one word doesn't just mean one thing, but it usually means a lot of other things. And depending on whom you explain it to, you have to explain more or less. Like, you also refer to the High Holy Days and being at the other side of the world, where you have the opposite seasons. So praying for rain in Auckland after so many weeks of rain, how do you feel?
Well, actually, I keep telling myself that it can only get warmer, because it is springtime here, even though I'm still wearing my scarf and my hat. But it's certainly a wonderful experience to be in such a different place and really to encounter so many wonderful people here.
Yeah. And we're going back to winter, so this is a good training ground for us.
Oh, okay.
We're getting used to the rain.
You can bring rain to Israel afterwards.
That's right. It'll come, hopefully.
Here in Beth Shalom, I've been to Beth Shalom to an event where there was also the rabbi from the Orthodox Church. Does that happen also? Not Orthodox Church, Orthodox
synagogue.
But does that happen also in your kibbutz, that you get visitors from the Orthodox synagogue?
No.
No.
They're welcome, but they choose not to come.
Yeah.
Because they have what Orthodox means. Ortho is something very straight, very, and they, you know, like orthodontist or
orthography.
That's right.
It's the right thing.
That's right. So they don't really accept us. We accept them, but they don't accept us. And therefore, there is political difficulties between us. They're always welcome, but they won't pray when there are men and women sitting together. And we don't want to pray when it's separate, because you want to be able to pray with your community. And for me as a man, men and women are part of my community.
Yeah.
And they are for them too, but they separate them so they don't.
But in the country, are you treated the same way? I understand that in the beginning, some years ago, there was still the preference to the Orthodox synagogues. Is that right?
Yes, but it's politics.
That's politics.
In other words, the majority of people are not Orthodox in Israel. But it's we have a coalition system, and the Orthodox go in more with the right-wing part of our politics. And if they're the majority, then we're sort of left out. So, but it's politics and not what happens in everyday life. We work together, we Orthodox people and non-Orthodox people and Jews and Arabs and Christians and Muslims. And in life, it's not like that. It's the politics.
I think it's great that you're working together with your neighbors and with other religions. And one day that'll be the politics, that everybody works with each other. I hope so.
I agree.
Hopefully, a booklet just came out about the Reform movement in Israel, and today there are something like 50 synagogue communities, and over these holidays there were 70 different places people could go. There are many preschools, there are pre-army leadership training programs, and we see that more and more of the Israeli public, who generally wouldn't choose to label themselves, find themselves more comfortable with the progressive movement because it reflects their general values. And so I think one of the things that we have to remember is that sometimes progress is very slow. But when you look back over a period of time, you can see that things have changed, and that gives us more hope and more energy to keep pushing. I was the third woman to be ordained in Israel. Today, there are probably close to 50 out of a total of over 100 Reform rabbis. And in 2012, we actually won a Supreme Court case in which the government of Israel said they would give money for salaries of rabbis of non-Orthodox communities in rural areas. In Israel, there's no separation of church and state, and people pay taxes for religious purposes. And until 2007, when a case was won to provide money for buildings, modest 150 square meter prefab buildings, all the money would go to the Orthodox only. So this is a change, and it doesn't mean that everybody likes the change, but in a democracy, we have to make room for that. So we see progress being made.
That's wonderful. And it's good to hear that on the ground, people are working together, and there's more equality in many cases.
We don't want it to be underground. We want people to celebrate all of that. So we're not yet there. It's still underground.
Well, we say it's from the grassroots.
Right, right.
And so the High Holy Days here in Auckland, you will hardly find any signs, external signs, except when you go to the synagogue. But how is it different to Israel when you say that it's Israel is a state with the Jewish religion as a state religion? So can you feel it like, Christians have the same here? For example, when I come from Europe, there's so much regarding Christianity, and you come to a secular country and it's quite reduced, and people go and do all kind of things on the holy days.
Well, we are a secular country. We are a Jewish country, but Judaism is not just the religion. It's a civilization. It's a language, holidays, history, music, dance, where we saw you dancing this week, doing Israeli dancing. It's so much more. Yes, we're a Jewish country, but in our definition of Jewish, that has to mean the welcoming the other and treating others as you wish to be treated, and not to do unto others that which you don't want done to you, and so on. And those are basic rules in our tradition. There are others who won't agree with that, because that's where the politics comes in and their interpretation of Judaism, which, frankly, I can't understand how they get to that.
So is everything closed on Yom Kippur, or is it a normal day and it's only in the synagogue's celebration?
Nobody can drive a car on Yom Kippur unless they want to get stoned. I don't mean with drugs, but I mean with rocks. The Orthodox will throw stones at cars that go by, and most, even the Arabs, the non-Jews, don't ride because it's sort of...
Are you allowed to throw rocks on Yom Kippur?
Absolutely not.
What's fascinating...
Or on any other day.
Is that not all Jews go to the synagogue on Yom Kippur. Not all Jews fast. Today, with cable and satellite television, you can certainly watch television, although the Israeli stations are closed for the day. And someone pointed out that it's a day of totally reduced emissions, that it's good for the world, it's good for the climate control, and that maybe other countries should adapt that at least one day a year.
We do it once a week. It's Shabbat.
And Shabbat, there are many fewer
cars
on the road, too. That is true.
Well, that's a message to the world. Let's see if we can do that once a day, once a week, or once a month, or once a year, to have this kind of reduced emission. I remember in the 1970s there was a time when oil was very reduced and there was no driving on a Sunday. And I remember one of my teachers telling me that he loved walking over the highway and riding his bike over the highway because no car was allowed to drive. Well, we might have to go back to that for every now and then at least and see what we can do. Thank you very much for coming here to the radio program. Thank you, Rabbi Miri, and thank you, David, for having come here. And I wish you all the best here for the High Holy Days, and hopefully you'll get some more sunshine while you're still here in Auckland and before you go back to Israel when it starts to rain there.
Well, thank you, and we're waiting for you to come and visit us in Israel.
Thank you for the invitation. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And let's have a look at what's coming up in our Mercy Spirituality Center. Next week, Friday the 18th of October and Saturday the 19th of October, Kay Ryan will facilitate a weekend workshop with the title Meaningful Encounters at the End of Life. This workshop is for anyone wanting to explore and reflect on the reality and mystery of death, our own or others. On the 23rd of October, 10:30 to 12:30, we will have a morning presentation by Richard Kerbel, who will share some thoughts and words from a Maori context on mercy. Afi mai, afi atu, mercy received, mercy given. And a glimpse into November, Saturday the 2nd November and Sunday the 3rd of November, Sister Anne Warren will facilitate a weekend workshop with the title Towards an Understanding of Life's Transitions. And you might remember that we recently had Father Kevin Waldie in Muffin Talk, who gave us some information on his presentation on Thursday the 21st of November, 7 to 9 p.m., Gratitude in the Bible, Gracious God of Israel and Jesus, Son of God. For all events at our center, please register with us per phone at Auckland 09-638-6238 or through our website at www.mercyspiritualitycenter.org.nz. And I wish you all a blessed Friday and a good week ahead. And thank you for having come here, David and Rabbi Miri.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Our joy.